There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you want to boost the economy like Taylor Swift? Do you want to run a business empire like Rihanna? Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, Intuit.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow. Is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
In really good moods.
Because you know what? It's the weather. It's the weather on both coasts at the moment. We're recording this on Sunday, the 26th of March.
Yeah.
And it's nice in New York. It's nice in LA. I don't know what it's like in our guest city right now. We'll have him chime in.
How
later.
Are things in Glacamora?
Glacamora?
Do you understand what that is a reference to?
Oh, no, I don't. I hate it when this happens.
It's from the Broadway musical Finian's Rainbow. Mm. And there's a song called How Are Things in Glacamora?
Now, why would you say that?
Well, just because it's sort of...
Now, why would you say that?
Not now, why would you say that? I don't know. I was having fun.
I'm sorry.
I said we were in good moods and sort of pattering the ball back and forth, you know, like you do with balls.
Yeah.
And I sort of just decided to go with something and you sort of shamed me, Queen.
No, Queen, I didn't mean to. You know, I was thinking of you this morning. I woke up. I
you
went.
You were?
I miss my friend Matt Rogers.
You said that to yourself?
I said that out loud to no one. Ugh.
Oh, you sort of sent me a photo last night of you and the girls at iconic New York party event, Horse Meat Disco.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit jealous, but not super jealous, because I am avoiding those spaces because I have a new rule right now, which is no new gay men. I don't trust them. I don't want to talk to them. If you have to introduce yourself to me, keep it moving. But I'm happy that you wanted to go to that event.
I needed to, because I was so hermetic in London for 2 weeks. I was like losing my mind. I was like, I gotta go out.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I have to like release this. And guess what? It worked.
Did you twirl?
We twirled. And guess what we did? We went to like this side room where it was like the energy was not quite dark room, but it was like much hornier. But it was me. It was the hens. It was me, Josh, Aaron, Patrick Rogers, Matt Whitaker. We all went to this back room and we just screamed at each other in a full conversation. And then the bit was dark room, more like red table talk.
It
was
like, I love that.
We were chatting, we were healing. And that doesn't happen.
And who says that the dark room can't become the red table? And that's a rule of culture number 48. Who says the dark room can't become the red table? Sometimes all the girls in the dark room, they need the red table the most. Like, we need to really come to the red table sometimes when we're in the dark room.
Absolutely. And Horse Meat Disco, more like chicken feed dance off.
Period.
Oh
my God. Wow. I'm so happy the energy is so good. Maybe it's the weather. Maybe, you know what we just said before we got on here? Jenny Nicholas was right. Let's go to the beach.
Did Jenny Nicholas say, let's go to the beach?
No, but she did say that things were turning around.
Yeah.
And we need to get Jenny on the pod, I feel.
1,000%. Oh my, I was just meditating to her like 10 minutes ago.
Okay, this is going to be a huge moment for the pod going forward when we do have Jenny as a guest. But I will say, So there was that iconic week a couple weeks ago where she said, guys, this is not the week. Everyone stop what you're doing. Stop. And it really was a truly awful week.
Yeah.
And then the next week, I was still feeling in the doldrums really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yet Channing came on and she was like, I know, but you have to use today, because I believe it was the equinox. And she was like, you have to use today to put
set
projects in motion and set your intention and put energy into things that you want to like see through. And I did that, and things are happening. Things are happening. And our guest in his book, The Best Strangers in the World, says he doesn't believe in any of this bullshit.
Which I was him once.
So was I.
On the record, on this podcast, I was like, I don't understand this stuff. I've read too many Carl Sagan books to buy into this.
Same.
Listen, Channing is someone, if any readers, Katie's publicists out there are on that level, Channing is someone who like puts it in very understandable, approachable terms. It's not even too, I would say, like mystic. It's just very like straightforward. And it's usually just about like reflecting and writing down your intentions, like pretty like full stop healthy things.
Yes, anyway. You described it to me as she's a scientist. And when you said to me she's a scientist, I said, well, I'm on board.
There you go.
I would challenge anyone, including our guests, to sort of grapple with this statement, okay? I'm just going to say this right now and just know this changed everything for me. Our bodies are over 75% water. How can you expect that we would not be affected by the moons, the tides?
Oh my God. Did she say that?
No, she didn't say that, but someone did who I don't remember. But whoever they were changed my life, because I went from being like, I don't believe in that, to someone saying that to me. And then I was like, not only do I believe in it, but I'm making it a large part of my personality going forward.
In you as a water sign, that's on period.
As a water sign, that's actually on aquatic period.
Aquatic period.
We mentioned our guest in passing.
Yes, we did.
And I'm going to do RuPaul right now. And my new thing is I'm saying how I meet people like RuPaul would say it. I met our guest in Mexico City in 2021. It was New Year's. I was with my sister, Bowen Yang, and we connected and shopped together the next day after a night out on the town at the store Boyfriend Shirt. And I had active COVID-19. And I'm telling you, I had active COVID-19. I did not know about it. And we shopped in a small store together. And I immediately texted our guest. I said, do you have the coronavirus 19? And he said, no. So not only is this person an author, the host of All Things Considered, the legendary NPR host. I mean, just like man, myth, legend, performer. I mean, have you heard of Pink Martini? I mean, like, it's just like there's so much underneath the gorgeous visage of this man. And also know he is very much Bella Ramsey in The Last of Us, and that he needs his brain removed and needs to be studied because he is COVID immune.
Yes, it will cure humanity if they study his brain.
This man is the vaccine.
This man is the vaccine. Can I just say, you know who listens to All Things Considered every day in the car? My mother, Meng
Su. Yeah, I was going to say your mom. I was going to say
but,
your
but
mother.
This is a big joke, because I'm sure our guest gets like, oh, my parents love you. And like, certainly I put on NPR doing the dishes in the bathroom, doing the routine. This man is in my ear. But for my mother to like choose to listen to an English language program.
Wow.
Huge deal. Huge deal. You cannot get her to watch anything or listen to anything that is not in Mandarin Chinese, like, except when it is undeniably essential. And that is a big deal.
Two words. Undeniably essential.
Kind of redundant.
It's a front runner for title of app. Undeniably essential. The new book is The Best Strangers in the World. It is quite
excellent.
A read.
Quite readable. I read this. I was like, I'm going to need like 5 days to read this. I'm a slow reader. I read this in three.
Yeah, absolutely. We loved it. Beautiful stories from a beautiful life. Well lived. I've also been sent an iconic 3 copies of it from PR. And I want to say thank you, because I absolutely love having a gift to give, because I can't think of a better gift to give than the book by our guest. And this is a moment in time. I know readers, publicists, Katie's, who identify as hashtag actually smart, are absolutely over the moon today to welcome into our ears our guest.
Ari Shapiro!
Oh my God, you guys, you have given me so much over the years. Entertainment, fashion, advice, laughs. The only thing you have not given me is COVID-19, truly.
Oh! I know. And let me tell you, I was a fount of COVID. Like, it was like peak contagion.
If only you had spit in my drink.
I know. I thought about it.
That was a fun night. That was my last night there. We all went out. That was very fun. That was the night that I met Ari, too.
Yeah, yep. On that rooftop bar.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what was so meaningful to me was seeing over the course of the year that followed, all of the flowers that bloomed for both of you. Mm. From Fire Island to I Love That For You to Wicked. To, I mean, it's been so glorious. This, in a way, feels like a full circle moment where we're able to reconvene and appreciate the amazing harvest you have both reaped.
That is too nice.
That is so nice. I don't know what to say.
But this man is, here's the thing. He's a host in all ways. Like, here he is making us, fluffing us on our own podcast. Obviously, an iconic host in his own right. And I'll say, I've had dinner at the man's home in Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, as many people say.
Mm. This man can cook.
He can cook. It's unbelievable.
Secret ingredient is love. I just pour a lot of love into it.
There is a culture out there of from my garden. There is a from my garden culture there. Mm-hmm. People who get to say the words from my garden.
From my garden.
Blessed bunch.
I know that I'm a cliche, but yeah.
No.
I garden, I grow vegetables, and I'm going to just come clean about this. I have a garden coach. I have this amazing urban farmer who every 2 weeks comes over and tells me how not to kill all the organic vegetables I'm growing.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed to admit that. They are from this incredible small local queer women-owned company called Love and Carrots. And it's like the
Love and Carrots
best decision that I made in the pandemic.
Oh my God. You have a trainer. That's like your version of like, I have a trainer.
I have an organic vegetable trainer. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I have professional help.
No, that's perfect. At this point, I need a task rabbit for everything. Not that I actually hire them, but it's like I need someone to tell me. But it's like at a certain point, I'm just like helpless. Literally, like all I can do is get help.
You cannot be expected to be good at literally everything. You cannot be expected to be an expert at everything. And if you have an opportunity to bring in somebody to share their gifts and talents with you and economically support them at the same time, it's a win-win-win.
There you go.
That's my feeling about the thing.
This is pro Task Rabbit culture, and I've always been very pro Task Rabbit too.
This is pro gig economy.
This is pro gig economy. Lost Culture is pro gig economy.
Yes, we support it.
I just say, if you want to figure out how to do all these things yourself, just have the Task Rabbit come over and then watch intently.
Right.
Yeah, it's the whole give a person a fish, teach a person to fish thing.
Thank you, Jesus.
Teach a person a fish, watch that motherfucker fish.
Yeah.
Film the person fishing.
Kill the person fishing. Cut off their head, start living their life.
I said film.
I thought you said kill. Where I'm at.
Took a turn.
How is this book tour? How are you doing?
Yeah.
It is so incredible. I keep waiting for the experience of signing books to become just a repetitive hand cramp activity. But every time I'm doing it, I feel just in sort of shock that these words that I wrote in private on my laptop, wondering if anybody would ever want to read them or have the opportunity to read them, are now going out into the world and being consumed by people. And as I meet people, like, it's just, you know, radio is this very strange medium where you might reach an enormous audience, as you both know with your podcast, but you don't often have the opportunity to engage with them because they're listening in their car or their kitchen or wherever, and you may never meet them. And now I'm like, actually going from city to city and meeting people who are telling me that they listen to what I have to say and they're reading the words that I wrote. And it's this really meaningful experience. So it's a like ambitious 11 city tour with a crazy itinerary, but I'm so thrilled to be doing it. Like originally I was supposed to be New York, Philly, Boston, DC, which makes sense. And then Dallas was like, oh, we want you to come visit. And I had one extra day. So I went Philly, Dallas, Boston, and met some amazing people in Dallas and went two-stepping at a country western gay bar called the Roundup Saloon. Like, I'm having a great time. I'm really just loving this experience.
Oh, that's the best.
Travel show Ferrari Shapiro.
I'm down.
I mean,
sign me up.
You know what it's like to be on the road. You go out with Alan all the time.
Yes. So Alan Cumming and I made this show with your friend and mine,
Henry Kapersky. The magic words.
And as soon as I finish this book tour, we are all convening at the Cafe Carlyle in New York for a 2-week run.
There we go.
Oh, amazing.
It's the most fun thing I've ever done, to just like bounce around the country with Alan and Henry. And, you know, like, we do this show where we just make ourselves laugh and hopefully make the audience laugh too. And we sing songs together, and it's never quite the same at any two nights. And Alan, I mean, you've both met him, you know.
Magic
what
man.
A magic man, like mentor, friend, older brother figure, just the kindest, most generous, selfless, joyful person I've ever met.
Yeah.
I love the chapter, the essay. What would you call it? Gosh, I never know what to call them.
Chapter
and a memoir.
Chapter, okay, story, great. Essay, either. Yeah, whatever.
Lovely.
Chunk.
It's, I loved chunk. The chunk where, because this is the dream, right? When you're performing with someone else on stage, is that they put you at ease.
Totally.
You described, like, people asking you, like, oh, it must be really intimidating to perform with someone of Alan's stature or whatever. And for you to say, no, it's the opposite, is huge.
Well, because it's like, if I jump, I know he'll catch me. If our show is going off the tracks, he is so talented and experienced and gifted, he knows how to get it back on the tracks. So I just have to, like, get up there and have a good time with him. And in the moments when we do forget what we're supposed to do, it's brilliant. It's fun. It's a moment that the audience experiences that will never be quite that way again. I'm sure you've both had this experience where you're doing a scene or a show or something with somebody who has so much more experience, talent, and expertise than you, that you just feel like, oh, they've got this. Yeah. I can relax, and I know that they can steer me where I need to go.
But then you still get better in the process of just like...
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you level up.
Yep.
It's that thing of when you feel comfortable enough, and I'm ad nauseum about this on this podcast, I feel, but I do feel it's the best advice ever for a performer, which is when you feel comfortable enough to start really having fun, that's when the audience feels like they're having fun. Like, truly, I mean, I always credit it. It's in Amy Poehler's book, Yes, Please. She said, the hack is, if you're having fun, they're having fun. And so, even in a very intimidating atmosphere where, you know, you're performing at, say, the Hollywood Bowl, as you have, or alongside Alan Cumming, where there is probably, not for nothing, but a ticket buyer who expects a certain degree of excellence. And I would imagine also someone that's coming that's like an NPR ticket buyer is not necessarily not going to be thinking about the value of their dollar.
Oh, but you know, the great thing about that scenario is they come in with such low expectations for me that it's very easy.
For you.
Like, if I can carry a tune, they're like, oh, okay, you can carry a tune. Like, Alan Cumming won a Tony. People come in being like, sure, I expect a Tony Award win. Actually, two Tonys. I expect a Tony Award winning performance. And then there's that other guy who's a journalist. And so then when I can, like, harmonize with Alan, people are like, oh,
they're thrilled.
It's amazing. And of course, Henry Kapersky, the third, we call him the vegan meat in our sandwich. we couldn't do it without him. He's just such a perfect foil. He's such a perfect sort of, like, you know, straight man in the corner, and we sort of toy with him throughout the show.
I mean, listen, you're talking to someone who knows quite a bit about toying with Henry
toying
on
with
stage.
Toying with Henry's meat,
you're right.
Vegan meat.
Vegan meat. He really is. He is a perfect foil. I mean, like, it's just me up there talking, and I'll reference him, and he is, like, the other half of my act on stage. But he is, and musically, he's so able to get on the page right there. I mean, he's truly a super talent.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
So the other day, as you know, Matt, I said to Henry, look, I want to do a version of CeeLo Green's song, Fuck You, but I want to do it like in an earnest Josh Groban style with an accompaniment that's sort of like early Pasek and Paul. Yeah. And he was like, got you. And he did it. And I was like, okay, here we go.
And can we just say, it is like an actual skill and talent to be like played off of in that sense, right? Where it's like you're an accompanist, or you're at the keys, you're on display, like you're on stage just as much as someone, like, as like either of you, and you kind of have to like do something technical, which is to play the music, but also like roll with like the vibe of the show, and like smile and like play along with like everything that's happening. It is a true talent that I think is undersung.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when you look at the people who Henry has worked with, from those of us present here to like Greta Titelman, Meow Meow, Larry Owens, Alan Cumming, like the list of people who he has made better than we actually are is long.
Mm. I will say my favorite person he's ever played for, when I released my special, which Henry and I made together, and I posted a separate like grid post like that was just all for him. The last picture I posted in like the carousel was him and Vanessa Williams, because I'll just never forget when he got to play for Vanessa Williams. And I thought that was so amazing. And that was like early on, when, like before he was like, you know, literally pals with you and Alan Cumming. And like, it wasn't a surprise to see him in like whatever country. Like, I never know where in the world he is anymore. It's one of the proudest times I ever, I mean, it's the proudest I've ever been when I hear what he's doing. And just because I knew him truly when, like, my image of Henry is like him covered in sweat, like carrying a keyboard upstairs. You know what I mean? Like going from thing to thing, like truly being like, you know, obviously deeply appreciated by the comedy community, but we were not able to appreciate him financially
right.
the way that we were, that we should have been. And now I take great pleasure in being able to like give him these opportunities and like treat him the way that he deserves to be treated, because we finally can. But I just remember like back in the day, the Vanessa Williams thing, I was like, yeah, she's like a legit superstar. You got to play with her. And it's my favorite photo.
I love that the
photo.
Reader's Publicist Katie's know Henry as like a character on this podcast.
Oh, for
even
years.
Though he was like recurring guest star, even though he's never actually made an appearance.
No, he has.
He definitely has.
Oh, my. When?
Early days.
Yeah. Early days.
Yeah, he got his own episode.
I came to it late. I have to go back into the archives.
You do. It's that would excellent. Be a really interesting listen, because I think we were dating at the time. And I also think, that was like right after Trump was elected, though. And I remember he had gotten to meet Michelle Obama. Do you know this? Has Henry ever told you this story?
Oh, wait. Oh, my gosh. My publicist, Joseph Papa, showed me this.
Yeah.
I did not. And I had to just like last week say to Henry, how did I not know that this was you? Of course, I've seen this viral video with Jimmy Fallon is what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, my God. Of course. Oh, my God. That was huge. That was so special.
It was such a horrible time because Trump had just been elected and everyone was truly, it was horrible. Henry and I were living together, I believe still in South Slope. And he was going to go do this bit on the Tonight Show where you had to tell a picture of Michelle Obama, like what she meant to you. I feel like now knowing what we know, like, you know, Michelle Obama's coming out. But for some reason, he didn't. And she came out and gave him a hug and thanked him. And it was just, you know, there's not a more beautiful from the inside out person than him. And to see him get that moment and receive that moment and like, you know, he really felt like all of us in a way, like, and I was just overflowing. And then we talked about that on the episode. That was a very emotional time. But yeah, talk about just like a superstar inside and out. That's Henry. I mean, and you can't, if you're someone that wants to book him for December, you can't have him. He's mine for
that's Christmas
all of December
time.
For the rest of my life, period.
What is it? First option? No. First position. Sorry. That's
first, he's in first position with me for all of Christmas.
That's right.
When it comes to travel, we all have that happy place. Whether it's the beach, ski slopes, couples getaway, or even a visit to that best friend you haven't seen in way too long, Matt.
And Priceline wants to get you there for a happy price, so you never have to miss a trip. Now, we all know we love to vacation together. We have various happy places. We love to go to Orlando, Florida. We love to go to Las Vegas, Nevada. We love to go to a beach anywhere. We love to go to Europe. But when we have truly traveled the world globally and domestically.
My happy place is with my sister and any of those locations he just listed. And now, thanks to Priceline's VIP family feature, you can go to your happy place more often while earning deals up to 5 times faster with a group.
When one person from the squad travels, everyone gets more deals, and you can even choose your own crew. It doesn't have to be your actual family. It could be your neighbor, your roommate, your mailman, anyone. The more you travel, the more you save.
For me, I'm choosing Matt Rogers. I'm choosing producer Becca.
Yes! We're all going together, the Lost Cult family. So download the Priceline app today to save up to 60% off select hotels and go to your happy place with Priceline. You know, but one of the toughest things about decorating my apartment has been getting things framed. Finding a place that will custom frame all my beautiful art pieces that I have without breaking the bank has been close to impossible. But then I found Framebridge.
I found Framebridge too. Framebridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. Easily order online at framebridge.com or visit a Framebridge retail store, upload a digital photo for them to print and mail your item using their free, secure, prepaid packaging. Or visit one of their 20 plus retail stores. Framebridge custom frames your piece in their studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free. I love going into the brick and mortar locations. I've got one here in Brooklyn and they're so sweet. They can give you inspiration for where you want to get framed. I went in and I was like, I'm going to get my Chromatica ball bracelet framed. And they helped me.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I have so many memories I need framed and put upon the wall. And they have a curated selection of frame styles with design experts right on hand who make it fun to choose the perfect frame for you.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com. There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst.
Speaking of the Obamas,
yes,
this weird thing that I've clung on to from the book, Ari, is that you describe being on Air Force One,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why this is sticking with me, but you're like describing eating, I think, spaghetti and meatballs,
yeah,
and I think yeah. you wrote the line, the food on Air Force One tends to lean heavy.
Yes.
Talk about that.
What is that about?
Well, even after Michelle Obama did her whole Let's Move, Eat Healthy, Improving School Lunches thing.
Oh, I loved Let's Move.
Well, we in the press corps in the back of Air Force One would still, for lunch, be served like a slab of meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
Yum.
And we would be like, why is this happening when the First Lady is encouraging consumption of fresh, healthy meals? And we speculated that it was because they wanted to keep us sedated and lethargic.
Yep, asleep. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. You're not going to ask the president tough questions if you're in a food coma. And
nope.
So our theory, never proven, was that they were trying to keep us down by overfeeding us heavy meals
yeah.
on Air Force One.
Interesting.
I think that that makes a lot of sense.
It's just yeah. a theory. We need an investigative reporter to get on that.
I mean, you were too tired totally. To investigate it.
I mean, look, this was yeah. the Obama administration, so things may have changed. For all I know, there's now an Air Force One salad bar. But at the time, there was a real dearth of vegetables.
That's so funny. Can I ask about Obama in person? So you
yeah.
describe him sort of coming up and like, you know, asking how's lunch and like being very present and you being in his immediate vicinity many times. Is it giving star quality?
Yeah, in the sense of, so like there's sort of paparazzi star quality, and then there's mm-hmm. I'm so comfortable in my own skin that I don't need to tell you that I'm a star
yeah.
quality. And
yeah.
he really gives off kind of bro vibes, basketball player vibes.
Interesting.
Like, he always just seemed super chill, super laid back. Very
chill
relaxed.
President.
And uh-huh. actually, so my husband worked in the Obama White House. We overlapped for like 1 year, which was an interesting moment. He was a White House lawyer. And so he kind of had a different perspective on the president from me. But he describes him the same way as just sort of like kind of bro-y.
Chill. Yeah.
Chill.
Chill
uh-huh.
president.
Yeah. That first time I met him, I remember. So I'm like sitting in my chair in Air Force One and he's standing literally right next to the armrest taking yeah. questions. And I remember looking up at him and I saw razor bumps on his neck.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You talk about this in the book.
It was like, it was my first time on Air Force One and I had never been quite that close to the president. And I just
right.
remember thinking like, oh, this is just a normal dude. Like he's a guy who shaves in the morning and gets razor bumps like anyone else. And he had been such a larger than life figure, any president, you know, like the symbol, the hail to the chief, the like trappings of the office.
Right. But especially him.
Totally. And in that moment, I was just like, oh, he's just a guy like any of us.
Mm-hmm.
It
right.
humanized him for me. The razor bumps were the thing I latched onto. I cathected to.
Cathected. Yeah.
Isn't that a great word?
I love that word. Cathexis.
Yes.
Which is even cooler because once you throw the X in there, it's like...
Any word is better with an X in it. It's
and
like...
That's a rule of culture. Mm.
That's a rule of culture. What number is that, Bowen?
That's rule of culture number 26.
Any word is better with an X in it.
I was just trying to reference a word that had X. Xanax.
Mm.
A great word.
It's the umami of letters. It just makes every word a little tastier.
Is that another rule of culture? X is the umami of letters?
Yes, it is.
It's rule of culture number 15.
X is the umami of letters.
It hits you in the back of the tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I never understood umami until someone was like, well, what's umami is ketchup. And I was like, oh, okay, I understand.
But ketchup has everything. Ketchup is umami, sweet, sour, a little bitter.
You need a little bitter just to round out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You really need all tastes. And that's rule of culture number 18.
You really need all tastes.
And I would say that about culture, too.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a great segue because I think you need all different kinds of people in this world to blend together to make the culture. And you are a person in culture. You're a culture former. You're a culture reactor. You are the perfect person to ask this question, which is the center question of Las Culturistas. Ari Shapiro, what was the culture that made you say culture was for you?
Okay, I've thought a lot about this. And I realized the true authentic answer is one that is not necessarily mainstream or cool, but it's real, and so I'm going to give it to you.
That's perfect.
When I was a kid, my parents had a VHS tape dubbed from the television of the PBS performances of Into the Woods and Sunday in the Park with George, original cast.
Wow. Bernadette and both.
Yes, Bernadette in both, Mandy Patinkin and Sunday in the Park with George, Chip Zine in the Woods. Chills.
Joanna Gleason.
Yep.
Joanna Gleason. And like, I watched those VHS tapes to the point that now, 30 years later, I can still recite literally every lyric from every one of those shows by heart.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents said, oh, you know, we're actually related to Mandy Patinkin. And
what?
I was like, wait, what? And they were like, yes. Our cousin Phyllis is married to his cousin Bert, not my first cousin, not his first cousin. This is like not actually related, but I, as this like young teenager, was so excited about it. I wrote a fan letter to Mandy Patinkin.
What?
Your relative? I explained, like, we're related. Yeah. My cousin is married to your cousin, and I loved your performance so much, and I watched it. He sent back an autographed headshot.
Oh, I love
which it. Which I pinned to my wall and had in my childhood bedroom all through high school. Like, other people had Guns N' Roses posters or Christy Brinkley photos. I had an autographed headshot of Mandy Patinkin.
Who I'm sure looked gorgeous.
Of course, it was like so the Princess Bride years.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay,
he was
but
such a star.
There is a coda to this story. Such a star.
Yeah.
Fast forward to my adult life as a host of All Things Considered.
Yes.
And I'm interviewing Mandy Patinkin about his album.
Wow.
And before we start the interview, I say, Mandy, I have a funny story to tell you. And I tell him this whole thing. And he says, wait, who's your cousin? And I say, well, my cousin Phyllis was married to your cousin Bert. And he says, oh, my God, we're related. Bert is my favorite cousin. He was the greatest. I wait until I tell Catherine, Mandy's wife, that we are related to Ari Shapiro of NPR.
Wow.
You have to come to my live show. I'm doing it in D.C. When we came to his live show, my parents happened to be visiting D.C. We went backstage. He greeted them like family. I'm getting emotional just telling you about this. It's... Yeah, so that's my story. That's like those VHS tapes of the original Broadway performance of Sunday in the Park with George and Into the Woods set me on a journey of culture that continues to this day.
Incredible
answer. That reads actually perfectly for you because it is, because I'll tell you, it's a thinking person's musical theater.
Totally.
And I would describe you as a thinking person.
Thank you. I would describe you as a thinking person too, Matt Rogers.
Well, that's huge. Not everyone would. I'm a feeling person. But that's perfect for you. Like the Sondheim of it all. And then your musical theater inclinations. Like that's perfect.
And when I think back to those shows, as a kid, I saw Into the Woods as very much about fairy tales, which as a kid made sense. And when I saw the Broadway revival, you know, it was very loyal to the original text. It didn't revolutionize it. But now as an adult, I realize, oh, it's a show about parents and children that uses fairy tales as the vehicle. And I think that as kids, like, we absorb what we're able to absorb. We take in what makes sense to us. And great works of art can evolve over time in our minds and our understanding and operate on so many different levels. You know, it's the genius of Sondheim, the genius of great art.
The genius of great art. I thought the same thing when I saw Into the Woods on Broadway too, where I was like, oh, my reading of this show in high school was like completely different than like what it is now as an adult. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, what a gorgeous sort of kinetic work it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And I thought the revival was outstanding. And I will say, I just saw the revival of Sweeney Todd.
Ooh,
Well, I saw it in previews, and so I'm actually seeing it. I'm actually seeing it two more times. I'm seeing it this Friday and next Friday. I'm
as many times Studium as you got Friday. Copies of my book in the mail. Yes.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to read on the subway. I'm going to read each copy.
Time. Yeah.
But that's my favorite musical. So it's Sweeney is. Into the Woods are up there for me. Yes, I love Sweeney Todd.
I feel like you could write a whole other musical with just the backstory that is delivered in a single song in the beginning of Act One.
You know what I mean?
Like, there is so much information delivered in that first song.
Yep.
It's like you can make a whole other musical about, anyway, before he
You're
went to the penal colony.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Whereas, like, I mean, there's so much there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
before the action even, like, begins, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so hard sometimes when you really marry a certain version of something in your head. Like, I wonder if when you're seeing the revival of Into the Woods, it's like you find yourself, like, sort of trudging along a little bit mentally watching it because you're so in love with a certain version that you're able to quote and I would imagine like sing along to in ways like because once you get really marinated and like Bernadette's witch it might be hard to hear another witch,
but you know
what I mean.
I expected to feel that way about the revival of Once on This Island, which was another show that I had memorized beginning to end.
We saw
and that revival reinvented the show in a way that was so exciting.
Michael
so
Arden,
beautiful.
You will always be famous.
Incredible. Incredible. Moment by moment, just surprising, delightful. Yeah. Loved, loved, loved.
Yeah.
There's something about Sunday in the Park, that original production, where the dress is still like insane that they made that happen. Like, people who haven't seen it, like Bernadette like steps out of a dress that like mechanically, animatronically like opens up. And I'm still like, how did they do that? Yes. That would be hard to do today, I feel, even.
That and the witch's transformation, both of them. I'm like, Bernadette has these two moments that are stage magic.
Yes.
No, Bernadette is such a superstar. I mean, like, duh. But, like, Bernadette is one of the best of all time. And I wonder, has she gotten, like, a Kennedy Center Honors?
Oh, she's overdue.
She needs that.
I was once at a gym in South Beach, Miami, and she was there working out with a trainer, and I actually, like, subtly followed her around from station to station in the gym. Yeah.
Well, you have to.
You have to.
You have to. How could you not? How could
you
not?
That's verified.
What was she doing there?
I can't remember. It was literally 2004.
She was doing back and shoulders, Bo.
She was doing, that's what I was asking. What was she doing there? It was back and shoulders day. It was upper body day.
Oh my God. Those are formative time. Those are really good. Well done.
Thank you.
Slayed the question.
Wow. I was stressed about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Those are wonderful, wonderful answers.
Thank you. No, I'm so honored that you think so.
You know what you absolutely have to go see? And I talked about this the last time because I sort of went on a Broadway tear and I saw everything. You have to see the new Parade revival.
Oh, I know. I know.
Ari, you will be really moved. You'll have a great time. I was just listening. The cast album came out.
It's out now, right?
For this new revival. It's just so, so good. I think Jason Robert Brown is Sondheim ascending. You know what I mean? Like, I think he is so good. I feel like he has, like, really revolutionized, like, and, like, mastered this new, like, contemporary musical theater sound. And this is, like, his first thing. This really holds up. It's beautiful. It's one of his best. I love pretty much everything he does, but you got to make this, and Bo and you too.
Yeah,
like, if there's any free time, this is the one.
I'm dying to see that. I'm dying to see Merrily We Roll Along. And I'm dying to see the new Sean Hayes play that ran in Chicago, where a friend of mine said it was astounding, and it's about to open on Broadway. It's called Goodnight Oscar, I think.
Goodnight Oscar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hear it's amazing.
I also want to see that one. And also Jessica Chastain in A Doll's House.
College friend Amy Herzog wrote the new translation, adaptation.
She did well.
I hear great things about it.
Something happens at the end that is such a gag. Like, it's like, I can't even spoil it, but if anyone out there has seen Jessica Chastain in A Doll's House, what happens at the end of the play, like, the way that Nora, like, well, spoiler alert for A Doll's House, but even though this is the hashtag actually smart episode, if you've made it this far in this episode of Lost Culture, you know A Doll's House, I'm going to assume.
Oh.
But the way that Nora leaves, mama, it might as well have been a death drop.
Mama.
Is there a trap door a la the witch throwing the beans and into the woods, just, you know, a screech and a puff of smoke? Wait, really? Did I just call it? Is that what happened?
I can't confirm or deny trapdoor.
Oh my God.
But your eyes went wide. Matthew. Wow.
My eyes went wide at the recognition.
Mm. Now, Matt, I have a question. Do we think Annalie is like, because this is her, at least her second time doing Sondheim? Because she did Sunday in the Park.
She's a Sondheim girly.
With Jake.
Yeah.
She's like the new girly, or a new girly, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yep.
I think that is very exciting that there's.
I don't even know if we can call her new anymore. She's like established.
She's not new.
Yeah, she is.
Of course.
But I think what Bowen is saying is like, there comes a time when like you become like, yes, musical theater beloved, and then you ascend to Sondheim's favy.
Yeah.
You're doing
Sondheim
multiple times is basically like what the status is. And I think that's important.
So you're saying that in the same way that we refer to like Bernadette, Patty, Ethel, Bette, we should start just saying Annalie.
Maybe.
Which is crazy. And also Donna Murphy, too. Don't forget Donna Murphy in that conversation.
Don't forget Donna.
Like, honestly, I will say this. If ever you see an interview with a musical theater actress and they say, well, the first time I met Steve, and they refer to him as Steve, that's a tell. That is a huge tell. And mm-hmm. I think it is so funny when these women say Steve because it's just so familiar and it makes me laugh. But what I will say is that he definitely signed off on her casting and liked her casting.
Yes.
I believe I read something in the New York Times that said he was to see a reading of it and then passed.
Yeah. Of Sunday in the Park?
Of Sweeney.
Of Sweeney. Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. Like, this has been in development for long enough that he was aware of it, knew of it, and signed off on it. But the interesting thing I found in that article was that this actually was his most personal piece.
Yes, like, I was so surprised to read that.
Yes, we're saying that, you know, Steve, this is the story of your life. And he maybe wasn't even conscious of that or didn't want to necessarily admit that. But
minus the eating people.
Right.
Right, exactly. Besides the murder and the, you know,
cannibalism.
Yeah, and they having rumpled bed with a woman, rumpled bedding legitimized. But this idea that he had been done wrong by the world.
Mm. I'm not sure how I feel about his unfinished musical being staged. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's hard.
We'll see. We'll see.
I don't know much about that, actually.
It's based on a like Buñuel short story. I might be wrong. It's like a Lorca, maybe. It's based on a like work of fiction.
Yeah.
And he'd been working on it for a really long time. But I don't know much, clearly.
More than we do. But I saw that headline, too, and I was like, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Reserve judgment.
I guess we have the goal.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly. Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that.
With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Well, spring is in full bloom. Are your finances blooming too?
With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest.
And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities for lower rates on loans, like for a car or a home.
You know what I love about the Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card?
What?
There are no annual fees, interest, or credit checks to apply.
Yes!
You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. Take back your finances. Build credit using your own money.
Yeah. Did you know that with Chime Credit Builder that you can get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit?
I did. You can also overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualifying direct deposit. Just set up a qualifying direct deposit, sign up for SpotMe, and Chime will spot you up to your limit when you make a credit card purchase or cash withdrawal that exceeds your balance.
With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at Chime.com/culturistas. That's Chime.com/culturistas. Chime. Feels like progress.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.
And I'm actually going to have some gall right now because I have to ask you a question. And I think it's going to be a pointed question.
Ooh.
Ari, here's the thing I have to say to you. So I was at the Kennedy Center and I watched your set.
Just no big deal.
You were hosting your show. I came because I was headlining with Henry the next night and I watched your set and you were performing a song and you said there was a lyric in your song that was like, and some people watch Housewives. And you sort of rolled your eyes at me and I thought, this motherfucker is being elitist towards me. And
so here's I was performing the Noel Coward classic, Why Do the Wrong People Travel? Mm-hmm. But having been written in the middle of the 20th century, there are some lyrics that are quite dated.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so I replaced some with more updated lyrics. However, I think you're pulling that quote out of context because the full line was, while the right people stay back home and watch Real Housewives. So the dichotomy of the wrong people traveling and the right people staying back home, you, my friend, are the right people. So rest easy.
So I should be out there traveling.
You should be out there traveling.
Okay, good. Here's my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the quote-unquote trashiest or lowest culture that you enjoy? I want to know. In your opinion.
I mean, I was an early Housewives watcher, but I kind of gave up on that. Love is Blind. It's not trashy, but my friend Alan, I have to shout out The Traitors, the best reality competition television show I've seen in at least 10 years.
Yeah.
I binged it. I savored every second of that show. The Traitors.
Wait, not to like connect too many dots, but the fact that you're good friends with Alan and that you officiated Alex Wagner's wedding between the Mole and the Traitors.
Oh my God. As a child, I wanted so badly to be on the Mole back when Anderson Cooper hosted it.
There's such a journey with the Mole. For people our age, I think, like the Mole hit at a very specific, important time.
I hope I'm not divulging any secrets here, but I actually had a conversation with Alex Wagner when she was considering whether or not to take the Mole. And it would have meant going to Australia and quarantining and being away from her kids. And I was like, you have to do this. I do not delude myself into thinking that is why she said yes.
I'm sure it influenced it.
But I was like, this is the dream.
Yeah.
This is
that
the
is
dream.
The dream. She and I were on the same episode of Seth Meyers. And I was like, I have to go say hello to her. I'm such a huge fan. And so we talked. And yes, I think she even volunteered that. She was like, I was really debating going. But I think she was saying, like, I was so much happier that I was in Australia instead of America during January 6th.
Oh, wow.
I think the insurrection, I think January 6th, 2021, she was in Australia shooting the Mole. Maybe I'm getting
it's weird
wrong.
When you're a news person. So NPR was going through budget cuts then, is going through budget cuts now. I was on furlough on January 6th. And so I was literally not allowed to check my work email or do any work.
Wow.
And it was so strange as a news person to be watching what was unfolding and just thinking like, should I be doom scrolling right now? Should I turn off the TV and go for a walk? Should I, like, I can't do what I would instinctually go do, which is like help tell the story of what's happening. And I just found myself so kind of like adrift and at a loss for like, how can I be helpful? How can I be useful? Which frankly is one of the things that I love about being a journalist, is that whenever there's a moment when it's like everybody wants to do something and doesn't know what to do, as a journalist, I know what my job is, what I'm supposed to do. And so that was a strange experience for me on January 6th, especially as it was unfolding like a 30-minute walk from my house, because I live not that far from Capitol Hill. I mean, look, it was a tragic moment. It was horrible for democracy, for society. People physically and emotionally and psychologically suffered.
Yeah.
For me as a journalist who wasn't able to practice journalism, it was just, it was very odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. Because something had to kick in, but then you have to like completely stifle it.
Yeah. And at some point when I've been listening to NPR with CNN on mute for the last 2 hours, it's like, well, do I turn away now? Like, do I go take the dogs for a walk and listen to Las Culturistas? You know?
Like, yes.
We were no help.
We were no help.
Yes. The answer to that question is always yes.
What if literally like all the journalists had been locked out of their accounts and only Las Culch could report on January 6th? It was just like, we are here on the ground and what we're seeing is just disgusting.
I would love to hear that commentary. People would pay money for that commentary.
That honestly, though, like in a real way, like to be have to be a spectator there is really tough when you have the talent and you have the experience that you have to be able to, like, you know, especially I remember watching it and there was an element of knowing exactly what was happening, but being so confused. And I think that is
because we've never seen anything like this before in the United States.
Right. And so it does need to be explained, like what we are seeing is an insurrection. This is the definition of what that means.
Right.
This is how this could end. This is how much danger these people are in. So it does fall to people like you to be able to get that information across. And I will also say one of the most moving and stirring parts of your book, Best Strangers in the World, is you talking about your experience with 9/11 and literally speaking on the phone to people in a journalistic capacity who then would perish, you know, I guess minutes or hours later.
Yeah.
Just that had to be, that has to, I don't, it stay with you forever is not even the words. It has to be formative as a person.
Well, it was formative. I mean, at that point, I was sort of the most junior person on the staff of Morning Edition. I was working a temp contract. I was working overnights from 1 to 9 a.m. And I was actually going to go home early because I like couldn't stay awake. And then we started seeing smoke coming out of the World Trade Center. And so my job was just to call people in the towers and put them on the air and say, like, what are you seeing? And what I realized that day was, so at that point, Bob Edwards was the host of Morning Edition, and he was not a person who spoke more than he needed to. He was a very kind of taciturn person. He's still alive. He is a very taciturn person. And I remember when we went off the air at noon that day and handed off to the next show, he said, in these moments when everyone is wondering what they can do,
right,
we know what our role is. We know what our job is. And I remember everybody was lining up to donate blood.
Right, right.
And
as
a gay man, I was not allowed to donate blood.
Right.
And I was like, well, here's something I can do. And so I would come in for the next several nights. I would like work from 9 p.m. to 12 noon. And one of my jobs was to write short obituaries that would be slotted in when segments came in, like a little bit short. And so they were like 30 seconds to a minute. And I remember I found the story of these two men and their son, who their son was a toddler. He was one of the youngest people to die that day. And they were flying back from a vacation. And I remember writing an obituary for the three of them and referring to them as a family and just thinking, you know, that is something that somebody else in this position might not have done. And I felt like even though it was this tiny little 30-second thing that just slotted into like a hole in the show, I felt like I had left a small fingerprint on the record of that day. And I thought, like, this is a way I can be useful. This is a way I can actually help shape the stories we tell, not as an activist, as a journalist, but as a journalist who brings my own experience and history and identity to the world. So yeah, wow. That was a really profound turning point for me.
Unbelievable.
You write in the book about how, like, starting out, you would work on obituary packages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is like a fun peculiarity about like journalism that I find interesting is that like when like our friend Henry Melcher started working at MSNBC mm-hmm. and when we were in college, Matt, that was like one of the things I learned. He was like, no, like it's so funny in these. And like my sister would like come home from like Bloomberg or whatever. She was working for Bloomberg at the time. And she was like, yeah, like all these news networks have these obit packages. Do you think that probably like honed some?
Absolutely. The great thing about an obituary is it's basically a profile.
Yeah.
And journalists write profiles all the time. But this is a profile that you don't have to do on deadline right. because the person is still alive. Mm. And for me as a beginning journalist, it gave me an opportunity to work with NPR editors on important stories that didn't step on any beat reporters' toes.
Right.
And so I could like gain those skills and build that expertise and do as many edits as I needed to do for stories that, you know, might air a month or a year or 5 years down the road. And it also helped the editors get to know my skills and my interests so that later on, they would start pitching freelance stories to me that were not obituaries, that were on deadline. And so it was a really important stepping stone for me along the way. And as I read in the book, Hume Cronin was like one of the first big ones who, right. you know, he was married to Jessica Tandy. They both won like a Lifetime Achievement Tony, I think. They were on Broadway in a million things. They were in films like Cocoon.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'll always think fondly of Hume Cronin, who had the courtesy of dying shortly after I did that obituary. So it actually got on the air.
So nice of him.
What a man.
So nice of him. What a man.
Didn't have to sit on the shelf. You got published.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, I'm not done with The Mole and Traitors.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Wait, so genius. So
First of all, Alex Wagner energetically is so perfect for that job.
She's so like mm-hmm. cool.
But then another person I could see being good at something like that is you.
I would in a heartbeat, anyone who is making a glam reality show set in some castle. I don't want to be eating worms. I'm not interested okay. in having cockroaches spill on my head.
Yeah.
But put me in some like fancy James Bondish get up and telling 20 desperate people what to do. Yes, sign me up.
Yeah, like what I had heard was Alan had the best time doing it. Like Henry was saying that he came back and was like, you know, I'm not going to do my Alan Cumming, but it was great. You know, like it was
so great.
Yeah, he had the best time and that he was thrilled that they were getting a second season. And that
absolutely,
yeah.
And you know, most of those clothes were his.
Really.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, like would add a sash or a beret or a brooch or something, but like they were mostly his clothes. But something tells me for season two, they're likely to have a bigger costume budget, given that there was an entire New York Times feature just about the clothes that Alan wears in that show.
Yeah.
But that is like an important, like, it's not even like an ornamental thing. It's like, it's an important thing about the visual language of that show, which makes it distinct from everything else.
The thing that kind of burst the bubble a little bit for me was learning that none of them actually slept at the castle. They slept at a like crappy airport hotel offsite.
I was going to say, that makes total sense. That makes total sense.
But also it makes it seem so much less fun. And Alan had a little cottage that was not far from the castle. Nobody slept in the castle.
Right.
Oh, bummer. Yeah, there is that like level of like you want to believe they're all in there. But then I guess that's easier to produce whatever movie magic.
Oh, but also I heard that one of them who made it to the finals, I don't know if this is public. I don't think it's a secret, but I'm just not going to name them, tested positive for COVID on literally the day everybody was supposed to fly home and then had to quarantine in that shitty hotel for another like 10 days or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
After they had wrapped on the show.
After they had wrapped on the show.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that they tested positive and showed up. Just that.
I want to find out if I win.
Although one contestant tested positive in the middle of the run and disclosed on their Instagram that's why they like dropped out and disappeared halfway through the season.
That's why. Yeah. That's crazy that it tests positive midway through the run and like have no one else. That's giving false positive and that sucks.
It's giving Matt Rotters in Mexico City.
I actually did get COVID 1 month ago, thanks to Alan's husband.
Oh,
we all had like an upstate Catskills weekend and I was so grateful that it happened 1 month before my book tour.
Oh,
because I was able to host All Things Considered from home. Mm. I sounded like I had a cold, but I felt fine. And now I'm like maximum antibodies, ping-ponging from city to city, shaking hands with strangers, and not worrying about getting COVID.
That's beautiful. Excellent. Are you still enjoying, and this is like, obviously, like, don't, you're never going to say no, but like, are you still invigorated and excited about All Things Considered? It's been years. And I wonder, like, because whenever you do something for a very long time and like it has an identity and it has a way that it's done, I know us with this podcast, we're always trying to find ways to make it exciting for us. And we've succeeded. Like, are you still succeeding in doing that?
Here's what I love about hosting All Things Considered is that even after 6 years, I know when I wake up each morning that I'm going to go to bed knowing about something that I didn't know when I started the day. Like, I can be curious, I can ask questions, I can follow my curiosity wherever it may lead. And the show is formatted so that I can do some big ambitious project where I travel from Senegal to Morocco to Spain, connecting the dots between climate change, migration, and political extremism. And then I can interview the incredible South African pop star Nakane about their new album, which, by the way, is my soundtrack of the summer. It comes out later this
Nakane.
Month.
Nakane.
Ugh. Do you know Nakane?
No.
They released an album a couple years ago that included an amazing track called New Brighton that was a collab with Anoni. Anyway, this new album, it's called Bastard Jargon. I'm obsessed.
Bastard Jargon.
There are a couple tracks out already. One of the tracks is a collab with Perfume Genius. Put it on. It will make your life.
Wow. Queer summer anthem.
Queer summer, non-binary, South African influenced, London-based pop dance extravaganza. You're going to love it.
Wow.
Okay, damn.
Anyway, so the point is, hosting All Things Considered allows me to do both and.
Yes. Mm.
I can be like hashtag actually smart, and then I can queen out with Nakane. And that's a combination that's hard to find.
Oh wow. My gosh, Nakane.
I think this is very... I'm going to like really try to, again, connect dots. But this is on a meta level. Like, I think this is like the thing about the book, the thing about you is that there's so much like connective stuff here between like the way you're able to like bridge something from like the way you currently are now as like a journalist, quote unquote, like buttoned up gay guy in DC. But like you like trace it back to like your days in high school, like being like queer, even though like that wasn't the word you used back then.
Yeah.
To bridge that thing and to bridge like the things between like all of your stories and to bridge the thing between like you having these like journalistic boundaries and reconciling that with the fact that you have to be vulnerable on stage sometimes. That was my big takeaway of the book, is that like you can like really shift between these modes.
I'm so glad to hear that that was what you took away from it, because I realized kind of in writing it that the through line of my whole life has been trying to make connections and trying to help people appreciate similarities and build bridges across chasms of difference. And the quality that I admire most in people is the ability to make those unexpected connections, bring people together, introduce them, you know, build opportunities for synthesis. Mm. And so, you know, like when I was in Mexico City and Henry said, "You have to meet up with my friends, Matt and Bowen." It was that kind of a thing where I was like, oh, these different worlds coming together and interesting people connecting in a foreign place. Like, that is the thing that recharges my batteries. Mm. And so whether it's performing with Pink Martini or doing a show with Alan Cumming or reporting the news on the radio from a war zone, I'm just really glad that's what you took away from the book.
1,000%.
Because I feel like that is kind of the underlying like base note of the whole thing.
Mm. Code switching international icon.
International code switcher.
International
Ari Shapiro
code switcher title of app.
Wait a minute. The queer mole style show should be called like Code Switch or something.
That's,
do you know what
good,
I mean?
Bo.
Ari hosts, Matt and I can EP or be in it.
Can we please make this happen?
Code Switch. Code
that is the name of an NPR podcast.
Damn.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
It's all right. It can be a reality show too.
It can totally be.
And, we just got to put an X in it somewhere so it's different.
So, like, here's what I'll say, because I'll like make a joke and be like, yeah, I want to go on Survivor. I actually want to go on Traitors. I really want to be on Traitors. Bowen, you'd be an amazing traitor.
I would not be an amazing traitor. I would be an amazing faithful.
You'd be incredible faithful.
Here's the thing. I've played Mafia with friends over the course of an evening, and I get so fucking stressed out,
yeah,
and
so
like my blood pressure rises, and that's over, you know, 2-4 hours. I try to imagine doing it over weeks, and I think I might literally have an aneurysm.
That's why whenever the traitors, like, that's why they all, like, fucking break down into sobs when they leave. Mm-hmm. Especially mm-hmm. the traitors when they get, like, the ones who got found out, spoiler alert, they're, like, sobbing by the time they go. I'm like, yes, because you've been holding... You've been, like, holding all it together this whole time. I know.
Yeah. It's literally... Crazy.
And you don't have any interaction with anyone else.
Right.
When you are a traitor, you are experiencing what it means to be closeted. And I hope that the straight traitors are really considering that what they're experiencing for 2 weeks,
Matt,
many of us experience for many years. And you're being closeted.
This is a think piece you need to write.
I am going to write this
We need to see this published in The Atlantic, New York Magazine, and The New Yorker.
Well, first...
It's that good.
First, I'm going to publish it as a rule of culture. This is rule of culture number 90. When you are a traitor,
you are feeling what it's like to be closeted.
And I know it eats them up because it's very hard. It's very hard.
Meaningful that the only non-straight white male traitor was Suri.
Period.
Like, someone who, like is, like, you know, visibly a very specific, like, identity, let's say.
Yep.
Yeah. And so she knows how to, like, and in a way, code switch, maybe.
Wow.
Is this such a stretch?
Well, here's the thing, too. No,
look, if you're going to write a think piece, you need more than one idea. So this is, I like where this is going.
First of all.
Co-authored, co-bylined by Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Yes.
He writes the foreword to the published piece. I have to say, if these people on Traders did not know who Suri Fields was and what she was capable of, then that's your problem. Right. She is an iconic 4-time Survivor contestant who has been robbed of the win at least once in a real way. And I will say this, the most cathartic moment for someone who loves reality television was watching Suri Fields do that to Ari Leyendijk Jr. Because there is not a more unsung hero of reality television than Suri Fields.
It's
and there
true.
Is not a more despicable act than the one that Ari Leyendijk Jr. committed on his season of The Bachelor. So to watch that happen in real
time.
What
was Ari's thing in The Bachelor?
So Ari basically proposed to one woman and then Becca. And then 3 weeks later, with the cameras in tow, came to her house and said, I'm actually picking the other girl. And the cameras followed her.
Okay, but that's great television.
Bowen, if you remember, Cecily did this on SNL.
Cecily played this
girl. And they did a whole bit of, like, the cameras following her around. Like, they were, like, outside the bathroom door while she's sobbing. And, like, Ari's there, like, Becca, you have to come out. And she's like, fuck you. And basically, that was as low as it possibly gets
on a
show like The Bachelor. And so to watch Suri Fields look him in the eyes and said, you don't deserve this. And then
do we think she knew that? Do we think she had seen that season of The Bachelor?
I think she's seen everything.
Okay.
I don't think that's why she made the decision. I think she made the decision to be like, you're a traitor, because she was like, fuck you. You are not coming in at the last second and splitting this money with me. This is my money. Goodbye.
There was an interview where she was like, if it had been $2 million, maybe I would have shared it. But $250K, no. That's
no.
Fine.
Absolutely no. Not.
They need to raise that prize pot too, I'll say.
I agree.
I want to start a GoFundMe to, like, but that's...
You want to be Sia.
I want to be Sia.
You want to be Sia, but for Traders.
How much does Sia give? Depends year to year.
Do you know about this, Ari?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I know who Sia is. I do not know about this
You
money
know the
thing.
Iconic Sia. She watches Survivor every season and just picks her favorite contestants and just sends them money.
Like, that is like, iconic.
It's, like, it's a thing.
That is iconic.
And it started years ago when she came to, like, a Survivor finale reunion. And Jeff Probst was like, my friend Sia is in the audience and she loves the show and she wants to come on stage. And so Sia
was
just,
she wearing the wig?
She sure was. And she just comes on stage with her wig and was like, I love this show. And that was my Sia. but she was
you
like...
You do a better Sia than an Alan. I'll say that.
Sometimes I can do Alan, but only in private. And no one will ever know.
Oh, well.
But basically, Sia is like another prize pot that you can win. It's like if you impress Sia, aka you get a good edit on the show.
I love it. It's the wild card. It's the Sia prize.
It's the wild card.
It's the Sia moment. And so Bowen wants to be that for Traders.
Yeah, I want to be the Sia for Traders.
That is a hole waiting to be filled.
Absolutely. Period.
Honey. Horse meat disco.
I hope Alex gets to do another season of The Mole.
Yeah, do we know? Is The Mole renewed?
I have no information on that.
I feel like it was a big success.
I have no information on that.
I thought it was too. I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. It's weird because, like, Netflix is The Mole and Peacock is Traitors.
I do feel I felt more conversation around Traitors.
Oh, absolutely. And also, Traitors was big fish, small pond. The mole was small fish, big pond. Like, nobody talking about Peacock before the Traitors.
And this is such terrible synergy, but they did send me like a huge care package full of Peacock swag. And it was like, and then literally Susan Rovner, head of NBC, emails me pictures of the Wheelhouses of Miami reunion.
Oh.
Like photos. Like they were like, it was like the day I went on Seth talking about how much I love Peacock. She like was like, thank you so much. Here are photos from the Miami reunion that we just shot today. Anyway, what?
I want that. I want a care package from Peacock.
I want a care package with those little packets you can throw into the fire to make it burn green or red.
The drama of that.
So good.
I love that.
You guys need to watch UK Traitors.
I've heard. Yeah.
UK Traitors doesn't have Alan, but it has this other iconic woman hosting it. I'm forgetting her name. I'm losing her name, but she's like a thing in British culture. She's amazing.
Wait, are there reality stars in that one or no?
No, it's all regular people, which is my big note for US Traitors is I think it should just be all reality people because I think that they get what's necessary. Claudia Winkleman is the host of UK Traitors and she is a story that's never been told. I love her bangs. I love it all. I love her energy. She's like, Alan is very like dramatic and Claudia is very British and cold.
Ooh. I love it.
So, okay, we're going to make Code Switch with an X.
Code Switch with an X.
We can first option to Peacock. And after that, we'll see where it goes.
Yep.
I love this.
Really?
I actually love this. I think it's time for Bowen and I to co-host a reality show.
It's past time. It is long past
time. All three of us, I'm going to say, I'm not entitled to much in this life and in work, but I think all three of us deserve to host that kind of show.
Can I tell you, I actually have a concept for this, Bowen, and I'm going to sidebar with you because I think I've come up with an idea for us to co-host a reality show. Yes, but it's really good and I actually do want to pitch it and I think it's really good.
I remember, was it Atsuko who her I Don't Think So Honey was about friendship reality shows?
Yeah.
This is the show that she's been longing
for. It's not necessarily that. It's more, it's a twist show. So it's like you think it's one thing and then it's another thing.
It's like a MILF Manor thing.
Exciting.
I am really excited. It's like MILF Manor.
I got it.
Have you watched MILF Manor? I'm going to guess no.
No, I have not. I'm so sorry.
I'm too afraid. I'm like, it's going to be too disturbing, you know?
It gets really, it's the darkest version of what you think. It's going to be very fast.
Yeah. It's hard to come back from abyssal stuff like that.
Yeah, truly.
Abyssal. Abyssal is a Yiddish word that means a little bit. Abyssal. Just abyssal.
Oh, that's funny. Just abyssal.
Just abyssal. Also a frontrunner for title of Ep God. This episode's full of them.
I think it's B-I-S-S-E-L.
B-I-S-S-E-L? That's not what I thought. I would have thought B-I-S-T-L-E.
Ooh, like a bristle without the R.
And that's what gets me cut out the spelling bee like a motherfucker.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs clogs and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you. Is the book out now?
Yes.
It is.
It is. Audiobook as well.
I narrate the audiobook. If you like me telling stories in your ears, you can get The Best Strangers in the World on audiobook.
And why wouldn't they want that?
I mean, maybe because they get 2 hours of it every day on All Things Considered, but I don't know.
No, because they love it. They're addicted to it.
Can I ask you a question? Did you find the writing of the book a difficult process?
I feel embarrassed saying this, but no, for me, it was actually really an enjoyable process. Mm. It was just like one step at a time, one bit at a time. And then, you know, I just gave myself permission to not be great in the first draft. And then I would set it aside for a few weeks or months and go back and make it, you know, hopefully better. And I just right now feel so, God, like fortunate and satisfied to hear the way these stories are connecting with people and that people are finding meaning in them. It's really a very unusual experience for me that I'm kind of just trying to savor.
Mm. It's really excellent. I mean, I think one of the big reasons people connect with you is that you find the angle that like cuts through the noise and like the way you... talked about Pulse was like the perfect example. It's like you did a story about like people going out the next day in Orlando to like Parliament House. It's like, oh, but like what other news outlet is doing that? You know, like it was probably just like several days, if not like a couple weeks of coverage about like the victims, obviously, and like necessary storytelling in that way. But like, I think the fact that like you would go to like these bars in Orlando immediately after and like talk to people going and why is really beautiful.
And I mean, that particular story, like I knew what that place meant. Like I'd been going to gay bars my whole life. I had gone to gay bars in Orlando and like, it wasn't until the very end of that reporting experience where I was talking to this guy who was editor of the Free Gay Weekly paper in Orlando. He has since passed away. His name was Billy Maines. But I was telling him like, oh yeah, years ago I went bar hopping in Orlando and I met these bartenders who were so sweet and they took me out the next night. And that had been 12 years before the Pulse nightclub shooting. And so I didn't remember the name of the bar and I was sure that it had closed. But Billy Maines said, what bar was it? And I said, I don't remember. I'm sure it's long closed. And he said, well, what was the layout like? What did it look like? Because he lived in Orlando forever. And so I described what it looked like, where you sort of walk in and there's a dance floor on your left and a sort of bar on your right. And he said, that was Pulse. And I just in that moment realized that like this place I had been reporting on all week that I knew I had some connection to just from it being a gay bar, which is a place that I had spent so much time in my life. Like it was not only a place that I had an abstract connection to, it was a place that I had a personal immediate connection to. And I looked on my phone for the name of that bartender who I had met 12 years earlier, and his name was in there with an email address that said @pulseorlando.com. There were two bartenders. One had moved to Chicago and was no longer working there. The other was still working at Pulse, but not on the night that the massacre happened. But it just made me realize that, like, as a journalist, I can approach stories as an outsider, and there's value to that. But also, the experiences that I have, my life, my history, my perspective on the world is not something that I have to set aside and put in a box when I go out and tell stories. It's something that I can bring to the stories I tell that can make them richer and deeper and more nuanced and more meaningful.
Mm. Incredible.
It gives you like the take that like really does, again, like cut through something that like cuts through the din of like what everyone is already hearing over and over again.
I just always ask myself, how can I make listeners who are busy doing other things hear this? How can I make them try to, you know, stay parked in the driveway, even though they're late to pick up their kids or whatever the case may be, because they need to hear the end of the story? What's a way I can tell this story that people are going to say, oh, I see what those people are going through and relate to them, and don't just see them as somebody other, somebody far away, somebody different, but somebody who I have a lot more in common with than I might realize.
Mm.
Do you consume a lot of other NPR stuff? Like, are you an NPR person outside of working there?
Well, I graze widely. I mean, I try to know what's on Morning Edition each day, and I try to listen to All Things Considered every evening when I'm not hosting. And that's a total of like 4 hours of content. So the rest of the stuff that I consume is sort of a little bit of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. You listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, just for kicks?
Sure do. In fact, my Chicago book event is with Peter Sagal, the legend, who just had a baby, and he's so sweet and wonderful to do my book event with me, even though he has a little tiny child at home.
King.
I'm doing that show this week.
You are?
Yeah, what? I'm going out to Chicago.
Matt Rogers, Mary the lead. Is this your first time?
Second time.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have so much fun.
I love it. I love doing the show.
That's the
I
best.
Don't do well on it, but I think I bring a good energy. Bowen would absolutely slay it.
I did it over Zoom, but like the thing is, you don't have to be good at it to have fun.
That's
no,
true.
No. It's a blast.
People don't listen for the knowledge of the panelists. That's not why people are tuning in.
It's Schadenfreude. People also not knowing what the fuck is going on, which is not necessarily true. Okay, so I think we have to segue into I Don't Think So, Honey, which is the segment of our podcast where Bowen Yang, Matt Rogers, and the guests on this episode, it is Ari Shapiro, they all take 1 minute to rant against something in culture that absolutely deserves a pulling down from the perch and a slapping in the head. I have something. It is topical. We haven't yet discussed this major moment in culture that is in process, but I have, I don't think so, honey, about it.
I know what this is.
He intrinsically knows who I am.
You know what this is? I can't wait to hear it.
I think so.
Yeah.
I have a feeling. This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Your notes on the Eras set list. The Eras tour set list. We are not giving notes on it, okay? I understand there are some odd choices. Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Prince as the opener. Listen, all she wanted to say was, it's been a long time. And then she segues into what should. And I predicted that she would open this concert with months and months and months ago.
Cruel Summer.
That is essentially the first song that opens the show.
30 seconds.
I don't want to hear that you miss Sparks Fly. We are getting the Speak Now era across with Enchanted. She comes out in the ball gown, gives you the moment. We have felt the Speak Now era. She gives you full-on Reputation. She gives you everything you need from 1989. I don't want to hear what you're missing from 1989. We get all the hits. I don't want to hear that you miss the self-titled. The self-titled as an era is encompassed with Fearless. We don't
Five
need
seconds.
The self-titled. If you're lucky, maybe she'll give you Tim McGraw on that one song she does, which is a different song every single time. Eras Tour, no notes. I am watching on YouTube and going 3 times this summer. I Don't Think So, Honey. Your notes.
And that's 1 minute. In Vegas, she sang our song, too, from debut, from the first
and
album.
And you know what? Maybe what I hope for everyone out there is that if they are the types of people that want another Speak Now moment, that she gives you Sparks Fly, that may, who knows, maybe you'll even be the lucky one, period. I didn't even mean to do that. And also get Dear John. I think
Back
it's
to
probably
December.
Too long. Back to December, I would love, but there's so much acoustic ready-made stuff. Maybe you'll get one, but listen.
But isn't the discourse the point? Isn't the hating the point? Isn't
often,
the disagreement, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I am anti-sycophant, okay? I believe that fandom is dangerous because I believe that fandom is dictatorship. And I believe that intense fandom actually defeats the purpose of even enjoying things. Because if you can't actually talk
Donald
about...
Okay, Donald Glover swarm. Thank
if you can't talk about and enjoy and like pick apart the things you like and also drag and be a little nasty sometimes, like you're... All you are is just an unhelpful clobber on in discussion. And then it all gets like...
Clobber on.
You're a clobber on.
Okay.
Wow.
I couldn't find the word because I already used the word sycophant and I only have so many words that I say.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. No, totally, totally.
And I'm the kind of person, I always have something to say. I always have, I don't think there's ever been a Taylor album or Taylor moment in culture that I've not been like, this is great, but this, yeah. Like, I always have something to say. With the Eras Tour, she's out there giving you 3 hours and 15 minutes of constant entertainment, giving you the whole thing. She said, I know it was difficult to get these seats. I know it was difficult to get these tickets. I'm going to make it a moment you'll never forget.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear notes on a 3 hour and 15 minute set list. I just don't.
Matt, I have a question for you. For your 3 viewings of this performance,
correct,
do you have a plan for the scale of sobriety to inebriation, how you plan to experience each of the 3?
You know, I think that what Bowen and I have found recently is that mushrooms are our girl.
For all 3 or for one of the 3 or like, or take them 1 hour into the 3 hour set? Like, what's the strategy?
Bowen,
here?
What was our cocktail when we saw Chromatica?
Chromatica was
rums and cokes.
It was rums and cokes. And then it was
mushrooms.
And I think we got beers there.
Yeah, but we also had, and what I mean by cocktail is drug cocktail. So we were on a little bit of mushrooms.
Like, no, I know. But it was rum and coke at the bar, like pregame. Mm-hmm. And then we took like mushroom chocolates, like before we got in the car.
Yeah.
And then once we got there, we ordered beers. That was like,
they
the
were
full,
hitting.
Mm-hmm. That was the full journey. Yeah.
And I would describe the way we felt at Chromatica, or should I say on Chromatica, as one of the happiest nights of my life.
Well, then you got to reapply that serum.
Yeah.
I'm beyond excited for this. Like, and we haven't talked about Eras Tour, but I've been watching the YouTube videos. It looks so fun.
Wait, Bowen, was that what you thought Matt was going to do? Was that where you thought he was going?
I thought he was going to talk about the Gwyneth trial. I thought he was going to
talk about
the Gwyneth trial.
New episode. Start from zero. trial.
No,
beginning
the Gwyneth
now.
Gwyneth trial is its own episode.
Oh my God.
Like that.
Hat to the gills with moments.
The Gwyneth trial was such a, it was like,
lost half a day skiing.
I lost half a day skiing. What was your name? Kristen?
Kristen?
Yeah, I was going to say Kristen.
I was going to say Kristen. You skied into my fucking back is the new from Aaron Brockovich. That asshole smashed in my fucking neck.
You skied directly into my fucking back.
What a legend.
It was unbelievable to consume. And it never stopped. Like, the hits kept coming all day when she was on trial.
Wow.
And I don't think it's over, right? Like, I think it's currently still in process.
Maybe. But it's...
Well, Apple Martin hasn't yet been called to the stand.
It will live forever in our hearts.
It will live
forever
in our hearts.
I'm so grateful that it's happening.
They allowed cameras in the courtroom. I'm grateful they didn't inflict those courtroom sketch artists on us.
No
cameras.
You don't want to see Gwyneth done in wax pastel chalk.
I don't think she did. I think she wanted the cameras in there.
Yeah.
Good.
I think she said, everyone, look at how ridiculous this is.
She knows her audience.
She knows how to play to them. You know?
Unbelievable. But wow, I understand why you thought that, Bo, and it really should have been that. But I have to
say, okay,
just like people discussing what they're missing from the Eras Tour of a 3 hour, 15 minute performance. I'm like, you guys. Come on.
She can't do the full discography.
She cannot. All right. So, Bowen Yang, are you ready for your I Don't Think So, Honey?
I am.
Okay. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, a bookmark made of metal. Oh, you mean a knife? You mean a switchblade? I've been reading very recently, including with Ari's book, with a metallic bookmark. That I'm not going to name the company that makes them, but it might as well have been Lockheed Martin, because these are weapons that can kill. These are weapons that can take lives. And I had many close calls with this blade of a bookmark. And I said, enough. I tossed it in the hotel trash bin, which is, we've discussed on this podcast, those hotel trash cans are too small.
And
I realized, this is a Sharps bin. This is for needles. This is for bookmarks that are knives. And if you're making bookmarks that are metallic, there are going to be casualties. Someone's going to die.
There will be consequences.
There will be consequences. Period. Trust.
Trust.
You will be dealt with. Lockheed Martin, stop it with these bookmarks. Any company that's making metallic bookmarks is Lockheed Martin.
And that's 1 minute.
Did TSA let you through with that?
Somehow. It was in my carry-on. And I was like, how is this... I can kill someone with this.
Yeah. And he told
him
that. He's like,
blade.
You're going to let me through with this? I will kill someone with this.
This plane is going to Cuba.
Jesus. In a war zone, you could perform surgery with it. That's a scalpel. Owen Hunt. probably performed surgery without Grey's Anatomy.
No, not. I'm going to guess you don't watch Grey's Anatomy?
Me? No.
No, it's okay.
Not even during the golden age when it actually was prestige?
I actually did not. I am so sorry to disappoint you.
As a Pacific Northwesterner, you
I know, more? I know, I know. I watched Portlandia. Does that count? As a Pacific Northwest show.
Yes,
it definitely
absolutely.
Is that. Yeah.
From an earlier era, Twin Peaks also, you know.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Isn't X-Files around that area?
Is,
or is that a lie?
I mean, I watched it when I was a child, but I don't remember where it was set.
I feel like X-Files would make more sense to be in set in like DC, right? Because they're dealing with sensitive information.
Those are the later seasons.
Oh, okay. I will say I did try to watch X-Files once from the beginning and I was like...
It's a different time.
It was a different time.
It was different back then.
Yeah, it was a different time. Yeah. But they still be making them. All right.
Do they really?
Yeah, there's like every now and then there'll be like an X-Files movie and everyone's like, oh, great. And then like, I guess...
I don't think there's been one for a while.
Is there not? Okay.
I don't know if that's true.
Every once in a while, like in 2001 and 2005,
I feel like constantly always in the news. It's like, and the new X-Files movie is right around the corner. And I'm always like, huh?
You're thinking of Scream, I think.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Okay. So, Ari, this is the moment. Are you ready for your I Don't Think So, Honey?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is Ari Shapiro's I Don't Think So, Honey. Very exciting moment in time. And his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Strangers going out of their way to tell me that I sound sick on the radio. If you show up to a party and you feel like, maybe I shouldn't go to this party. I'm a little worn out. It's been a rough week. And you get to that party and the host of that party greets you at the door and says, girl, you look tired. Do you really want to hear that from the host of your party? No. This is the same thing, but coming from strangers. If I'm congested on the radio, girl, I know that I am congested on the radio. And unless you are reaching out to actively Uber Eats matzo ball soup to my house and know I am not giving you my home address, I don't need you to inform me of that which I am already aware. And furthermore, if I am hosting with a cold, I am doing so from home and you are getting a free product. It is public radio. Yes, thank I know you. You can donate to your local public radio 15. Station, but you know, 90% of listeners do not. I just made up that statistic, but I'm pretty sure it's true. So appreciate what you're getting for free, even if you're getting it with a little bit of a raspy cough and a little bit of congestion, because I know that I am hosting with a cold and I don't need you to tell me. I don't think so, honey.
And that's
1 minute.
Very well done.
Do you get that? When you're hosting the podcast with a cold, do you get readers, Katie's publicist,
commenting on your vocal quality?
You sound sick. Thanks. I was unaware. Appreciate the info.
What I got recently was, it sounds like Matt Rogers has a cocaine problem.
Rude. Actually, I do kind of appreciate that. I think that's kind of hilarious. That's amazing.
And then I was like, I literally responded. I was like, I don't have a cocaine problem. Thank you very much.
I have a cocaine solution.
Yeah, period. And then they were like, oh, well, it sounds... So I guess you just have a habit that you're on top of then. And I was like,
wow,
don't you ever get into these DMs again. I was like, I can't believe this. I was like, if you must know, I've been sobbing for months. That's why I sound nasal. Cocaine.
You don't need to say that.
It's so wild.
I felt like you two could probably relate to that.
Oh,
I
definitely.
Felt like,
you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm aware. I am aware when I sound less than my best. And y'all's noting it for me is not appreciated.
Yeah. Also, you literally had COVID-19.
I literally had COVID-19, COVID-19 and was hosting from home. And when people were like, you sound like you shouldn't be on the air, I was like, no shit.
You know, I guess I'm kind of like, I'm really happy that you didn't get COVID that day we were in boyfriend shirt in Mexico City. I'm really happy you didn't get it. But that makes me feel like I have like limp dick COVID.
Ooh. What does that mean?
My COVID wasn't powerful.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My COVID wasn't coming out of my body like that girl.
Mm. You're sad that you didn't give someone else COVID?
I'm kidding.
Not just someone else. I mean, it would have bonded our friendship. It would have cemented our meet cute story. That.
Yes.
And then after we went shopping together, we got COVID.
I know. I was like, I swear to, I know you have COVID now. I was like, because I literally, I think
I remember
and I started to feel awful, like, right after, and then took a test, and I was like, oh God, I have to tell Ari Shapiro that I gave
him
COVID.
Girl, nobody was surprised to get a text from you saying I have COVID. We all know how that New Year's trip went. It's like, yeah, well, that's what comes of it.
We were pretty tame, though, honestly. Were we not?
On a scale
we were, like,
of what
at the
to
Mescaleria.
What?
The Mescaleria.
Oh, that night we were pretty tame. Yeah. That's
we were
true.
Tame.
We had lovely cocktails.
Yeah.
Some sushi.
This was coming off of Omicron, though. This was like still, Omicron was still kind of in the air.
It was the winter surge. Yeah.
It was that time.
Omicron era when that was when I guess, 1 million people got it all at once. Yeah.
You're one in a million, Matt Rogers. You're one in a million.
No, you are, because you not only survived,
I didn't get it.
Not only didn't contract COVID that day, but happened to be you. And you've written this incredible book.
Aww.
And it's called The Best Strangers in the World. And it's stories from a life spent listening, which I think is beautiful.
Thank you so much.
We absolutely loved it, and we've loved having you.
I have loved this conversation, the best 90 minutes of this entire book tour.
That is really hyperbolic.
Name one person that this was more fun to do than talk to them.
You expect me to call them? Absolutely not.
This is absolutely not. We're messy here. I want you to name one person on the tour.
I'm going to just whisper it really quietly so that only you can hear it.
Tell us after with your full throat. But wow, thank you so much.
Pick up the book, buy the audiobook. It's a really special one. You're not going to regret. I really was just like, what a gorgeous, enriching read. So,
thank you.
Everybody, pick it up.
And we, Bowen Yang and I, we end every episode of with a song. And it's true, the same way my body is blue. I'm feeling the happiness. It's a cool summer. He gave the thumbs up on his emoji. And if you want to hear more of that, go see the Eras Tour. It's the first song.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
You know that I feel like it's really important to express yourself.
I know that about you.
You got to put your true self out there, okay? And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do just that.
Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean, literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know, it doesn't get more comfortable than Croc clogs and sandals. They're just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Some say Titanic is the best gay nightclub in the city, and those people are me.
And me. So set sail with this cookie crazy off-Broadway hit and get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.